Hey everybody, it's Cherise
and Shari,
and we are the Optimistic Divorcees, and this is our podcast. We are two happily divorced women who are optimistic about life but real about love, and this is our second episode, and we're so happy to have you here.
We are. Welcome back, guys and girls.
Welcome, welcome. All right, so now it's time for the I Do, I'm Done segment. This is where Shari and I will talk about something that we've seen, heard, or read that we love or we hate. So this week, I have an I'm Done. So I just recently joined Bumble again.
I'm cracking up that I'm already laughing at this.
Right. It
has not I'm cracking up.
It has not been a week, and guys, I am done. Okay. I'm done. First of all, I want a black man. Okay. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I thought I was gonna give other people a try before, but no, that's just a hard pass for me. I want a black guy. So on Bumble, I scroll through 10, 15 whites and others before I even get to black.
Not white.
And it's at the point where I'm like swiping right just because the guy is black.
Dang.
And plus, I don't like that with Bumble, the woman has to make the first move. Like, I don't like it. So
maybe you need to try another one. I mean, first of all, it surprises me that you're on Bumble anyway because you don't like to make the first move. So why not do like a Tinder or OkCupid or Coffee Meets Bagel or what other one do they have?
I've done them all first off. So,
at this point, it kind of doesn't matter.
I was trying to do something different. Like, no, I don't like to make the first move, but let me try something different to see if I get a different result. And I don't like it, period. The online dating, regular dating, I just want to be done with it all. But this week, I'm done with Bumble, so. We'll see what happens.
Okay. You're officially giving Bumble the heave-ho?
I think so. I'll let y'all know if I change my mind, but right now I'm done.
I think that, and I know we're going to talk about this whole dating thing in our next episode, I believe, and like where we are with that, but I think that you should try a matchmaker.
You know what? It's funny that you say that because I was actually looking at the Matchmaking Duo's website probably a week ago, and I'm like, maybe this is something that I need to invest in.
I think so, because I mean, listen, you have definitely been open to giving these apps a try. I mean, you've had a couple of small hits, but no like real major like home run. So yeah, I mean, I think that when you talk about wanting to do something different, I think that would be doing something different.
That is totally different. Like, that's huge. So I'm gonna check out the price first off.
See if they got layaway.
After pay. Can I make full payments?
They got Klarna.
Right. Exactly. Is this like QVC? Can I just pay?
Let me put a deposit down with the first date and just see how it goes. And then see with the installments.
Right. So that's something, yeah, I've actually contemplated. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there.
You know what? Because now that I'm talking to you about it, maybe I'll try it. Because, I mean, I've never tried it. But again, I digress. We're going to talk more about all of this in our next episode. So I'm not going to go
right, down there. Right, right, right.
So easy.
So now tell us, Shar, what do you have this week?
Okay, so this week I also have an I'm Done. And my I'm done is based off of the show Married at First Sight. If you have not been watching this season, it doesn't matter, because if you're on social media, you've been seeing other people's posts who have been watching. Yeah. So you know about hashtag everybody hates Chris.
Dang.
Yeah. Yeah. Ain't nobody fooling him. But anyway, you know about Chris and you know about Paige. If you don't, I will just give a very brief little snippet of who they are. So Chris and Paige are the newest couple on Married at First Sight. He is they're both black. He is a former minister, you know, total church boy. She is, you know, a saved woman. And he was going in already, like, when we first met him in earlier episodes, he's just like, oh, you know, I want someone who's a Christian, but I also want her to be a freak. I want this, but I also want her to be a freak. Everything that he wanted, it was like, and freak was attached to it. And then, you know, I want to cook and be a freak. I want her to love Jesus and be a freak and have my babies and be a freak. You know, I like want her to like going to the movies and be a freak. And be submissive and be a freak.
Right.
You know me, you know, like, love God is love God, you know, love people, be a freak. It was like, that was him. And then Paige, she's like, you know, I just want a nice man. I'm hoping that this can be the way that I meet someone that God has for me. And I mean, hey, I am a freak, but I'm also saved. I just want a nice guy. So fast forward, you know, Chris meets Paige. He's not attracted to her. Let me just say this too.
With his funny looking.
Yes. I'm not going to talk about Chris because I have been going in on him. I'm not going to do it right now the way that I really want to. Maybe it will come in future episodes. But I roast the mess out of him every week. But anyway, like, he wasn't attracted to her and then had the nerve to, like, say something like that to her friends, which I personally don't think that her friends checked him enough, because if somebody said that about my friend, it would have been a wrap. Anyway,
he said it on the wedding day.
Yes. Sorry. Oh, wow. I know you. Sharice was just catching up, you guys, so I can't give a whole lot. But let's fast forward, okay, and move to the point where Chris has sorry, Sharice. Well, I think you know what's going on. I have to talk about some of this. But basically, Chris has been putting Paige through hell. Okay? It's only been 2 days already. And he's already been putting her through hell because A, he doesn't know how to communicate. Every time he talks, he's mumbling and, like, won't open his mouth. His communication style, he has none. Okay? She literally she has to be the one to ask him, like, what's wrong? What's going on with you? Talk to me. I'm tired already.
Breathe, Shari.
I know. I get so worked out. I mean, worked up. Because when I tell you, when I see him on the screen, I immediately just get filled with, like, rage. Like, he annoys the mess out of me. Like, for real. He annoys the mess out of me. Anyway. So, this latest episode, I hate to do this to you, Sharice, because you haven't watched it.
Oh my God, I just told somebody else, don't tell me.
I know, I'm sorry.
There's no way you can get around it.
I can't. So, okay, let me say this. Yeah, sorry, Sharice, you just gotta watch it and just know what's coming. So anyway, on their wedding night, they have sex. Not once, not twice. I think like 3 times, okay? Like maybe twice that night, once in the morning, whatever. And then he goes on to tell her that he's not attracted to her, okay?
After they do it.
After, okay?
Oh, my God.
Let me tell y'all, the words that I want to say right now, I cannot say because I'm trying not to cuss on this podcast. But please know that I want to use all of the words, but I am refraining right now. Okay, so that's number one. Then let's fast forward, okay? They go to the honeymoon, and he has some news for her that he doesn't want to tell her. Now the producers know, and the producers are telling him, dude, you need to say something to her. You need to let her know. You need to tell her. He was like, I don't want to tell her. So then they're having breakfast and she can see that clearly, like, something is bothering him. Like, it's very visible. So she's constantly asking him, like, what's wrong? Like, something is up. Like, I feel like you need to tell me something. And he was like, I don't want to talk about it. She's like, what? And I'm like, what? Speak up. And he's like, I don't feel like talking about it. I mean, and then he says, I got some devastating news. But then follows it up with, I don't want to talk about it. I'm sorry, what? After you say, I got some devastating news, you need to be moving on into the next phase of that conversation where you're telling me what the devastating news is.
Right.
So the devastating news is that his ex-fiance that he was just with prior to being on the show, which, by the way, he should have never been on this show. The expert should have never chosen him. Anywho, is pregnant. So now this woman who has the love of God in her heart, okay, she's visibly she's shocked. And oh, here's the other thing. He takes her in the bathroom to tell her away from the cameras and talks about turn your mic off or pull your mic off or whatever. So he comes out and is like, I told her. She was like, I need a minute. This woman is still willing, after all of that, to be there for him, you know, asking him if he's doing okay, all of this stuff. Meanwhile, in addition to her being there for him and all of that, in the confessional, she's talking about, you know, let me just say this first. She's trying to decide if I'm going to stay with this man or if I'm just going to go ahead and bounce because this is too much. It's literally only been 2 days and this is what has been dropped in my lap.
Yeah,
but then she follows it up with, but maybe this is God's plan for my life. I mean, maybe this is, you know, maybe, you know, there's something I'm supposed to learn from this. Maybe this is, and the whole time I'm like, sis, no. Like,
I wish y'all could see my face. Oh, wow.
This is why I'm saying I'm done. Because I saw Melissa, she responded to my story because on my Instagram story, I said, like, Chris is trash. I said, fill in the blank. Chris is trash. Paige is blank. And Melissa responded and said, toxic faith. And I'm like, that is exactly what it is. I feel like there is so much, and I'm sure we'll talk about this in further detail too on an episode, Cherise, but I know that you will understand where I'm coming from. But there's so much doctrine that has been taught in the Black church when it comes to women and just hanging in there and putting up with stuff that we have no business putting up with. You know what I'm saying? But it's like we go to these women's retreats that the church has. We go to these singles conferences. We go to these how to be a good wife conferences. And this is the type of stuff that is basically spewed and, like, it's put out into, you know, those types of forums. And of course, you know, we started going to this. I'm sure you did too. We started going to singles ministry stuff about 18, 19 years old. So imagine having experienced those types of events, those types of conferences at the age of 18. I think she's in her late 20s, so at least 10 years. And this is what you're being told all the time in church, you know, that, you know, you have to, or God is gonna, you know, bring you through this, and God is going to strengthen you, and this has only come to make you stronger, and God won't put nothing more on you than you can bear. The trying of your faith produces patience, you know, all of these things. And she says, she said for sure that God won't put nothing on me that I can bear. She said that, and every time she says it, it's like I get frustrated, because it's like, no. I think what really bothers me about this is because I can relate to it so much, because of things that I went through dealing with my ex-husband and things that I was told in the church, but I'll stop there because we're going to talk more about that in this episode. But anyway, that is my I'm done for this week. And I ain't got nothing else to say because I don't want to get riled up again. So
I got a question for you. Do you think that the case is maybe that she's just not being honest with herself, and that the real deal is, look, I took this huge risk and made the sacrifice to come to this show. I married this stranger. So since I'm here, I'm going to stick it out and try to work it out no matter what.
I actually thought about that because, well, I can totally see that. I can see that. And I thought that that could be the case because, like you said, you've gone through all of this, you know, now you're on the show and it's like, okay, well, what else am I supposed to do? But I also wonder if this is, sometimes we want something so bad that we just refuse to see something for what it really is. Yeah. So we put up with all kind of stuff regardless. I wonder if that's what it is. And then you want to put it like on God and you know, say that he's the one that wants you to stay in this. So I don't know.
Don't blame God for your mess, child.
Exactly. Don't bring him up in this page. Okay, this is all you. Okay.
He gives us common sense and intuition.
That part. And
all that good.
That part right there.
All right.
He also gives us exits, and there have been plenty.
Yes. He gives us a way of escape. That's in the word, is it not?
Exactly.
Right about it.
So anyway, yeah, guys, that's our segment for today. Now let's go ahead and move right on into what we're going to be talking about.
All right, guys. So on today's episode, we decided that we would share our marriage and divorce stories. If you've been following us for a while, you know, from our Periscope days on Instagram, Facebook, whatever, some of you may be familiar with our stories. But for those who aren't, we figured we would, you know, give a little background and share our marriage and divorce story. So, Charisse, you're going to go first, right?
Yes, ma'am.
I am. Okay, well, let's just go ahead and kick it off. I'm going to be the Oprah for today, okay? So, let's just start with the basic question. How did y'all meet?
So, we met at church. We were both church kids.
Typical.
Huh?
I said typical.
Exactly. Actually had grown up in the church, but left when his mom got married and moved away. But then he ended up coming back to the area to live with his grandparents and go to high school out there. So he came back to the church, and I had just been a member probably like a year. So everybody there knew him. I was new to meeting him. That was that. I was about 13. He was maybe 14, almost 15.
Wow. Okay. Yep. Keep the story going.
Well, that's how we met. He was the choir boy. Choir, leading the songs. He had a community choir. We were just friends, like strictly friends. Nothing more. We were friends to the point where he had girlfriends and we would be on a three-way call together. Like, we were just cool. Mm-hmm. Never looked
strictly at, friends.
Strictly friends. I never thought of him as anything else. And then,
okay. And then, right. That's what I want to know. And then?
And then, one day, you know how in the movie, like when two people see each other and then the music is like, ah.
Mm-hmm. Because you start to see them like in a different light.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, wait a minute.
Right. Like, do I like him? And that's kind of like what happened with me around. I was like a junior in high school. And I actually, this is surprising to me because I'm not like this now. I asked him to go to my winter ball at school.
Okay.
He agreed to go. But something happened. I had to work or something, so we didn't end up going. But he ended up being my junior prom date.
Okay.
That next. So, so that's where things kind of started as far as dating. My parents liked him. You know, like I said, he was a church mm-hmm. boy. He knew how to charm the parents.
I thought you were going to say he knew how to charm the pants off of me, but you were saying the parents. Uh-huh. Hey, got it.
They even let him drive my daddy's Cadillac to the prom.
Okay, that's how you know he was in there.
Exactly. but we didn't make it through that whole year. Because he was supposed to be my senior prom date, too. Something mm-hmm. happened toward the end of that year. And I was like, you're not going to prom with me no more. Don't talk to me. So we didn't talk to each other. Like, we would see each other at church, but we didn't talk until after I went to senior prom.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, you know Mary. When we were still printing out the pictures from the disposable camera, printed out the pictures, and I'm gonna show him how fine you were on prom. Let me show him what he missed out on. So of course she took the pictures to church that Sunday. Of course I was beautiful. And
I know it's of course I was beautiful. I mean, what else can you expect?
And we pretty much started dating officially.
After he saw those pictures?
From that point on.
Mary was like, you know, let me put this back on track. Sam, bring those pictures. Give me those pictures. I want to put them in my purse before we go to church.
No, you sound
get them
like
off the... They on the buffet? Bring them over here, Sam. I don't.
Mm-hmm. No.
Get your keys.
By the curio cabinet.
Oh, by the curio. Okay. See, we had a buffet in my house. By the curio.
Oh, my God. Yes. That was
all right.
June of 97.
Wow.
I graduated
okay.
a week later. His grandma died in August. That's who he lived with and took care of. His grandfather had died, I think, earlier that year. So it was just him. You know, I was there for him. We were actually...
A shoulder to cry on.
I was mm-hmm. taking care, making sure. His grandma, I remember going to see her in the hospital, and she told me, make sure, help him keep that house clean. Child, I don't even know. I really liked him because I used to go over there and that room was disgusting. Okay.
Spoken like a black grandmama. On her deathbed, she said, yeah. Keep that house clean.
Yeah. And by this time we had already talked about getting married. So mm-hmm. we told her. And I remember her saying, well, marriage is honorable.
She was like, I can take my rest now. How long after that?
I think he died shortly after that. And then we were actually getting...
Why am I laughing at that part?
I know. Hello? This is a touching story. Grandma gave me her blessing. The Lord. And you heard her. Oh my God. Oh my God.
I am serious.
You're like Bernie always.
I got tears in my eyes. Let me tell you something. That's how ignorant I am. Okay, go ahead. God rest her soul.
Right.
Woo.
Okay, so we had already been talking about getting married, and we were actually planning on getting married Valentine's Day of 98. Mm-hmm. We ended up pushing it up because planning was not good. Mm-hmm. Everybody's opinion mattered more than the people getting married. So we said, you know what? Forget this. We gonna get married next month. So we got married September 97.
Okay, wait.
Tuesday night.
Well, go ahead. I'm gonna let you finish your September 97 on a Tuesday night. Go ahead.
On a Tuesday night, we got married after work. He worked at a bank, so he still had on his work clothes. And I worked at a grocery store. That was my first, mind you, I was 18. Mm-hmm. So that was my first job. And I went home and changed and put on my little church suit. And
what color was it?
It was black.
I see.
It was black with a white collar, and like the cuffs were white.
So why did you choose that color? Why did you choose that dress?
Because it was the most flattering little outfit I had.
Okay. So how did you know then at 18 that he was the one? Or did you know?
I mean, I thought I knew.
What about that time? What about him at that time made you feel like he was the one?
I felt like we had so much in common just being church kids. Like, we could relate. Since that was most of my life was church, we could relate to each other in that way. And then we both loved music and singing. And so, and I just thought he was so funny. And, you know, he was a little bit older than me. So I just liked him, his responsibility. You know, he took care of his grandparents mm-hmm. and worked and went to school. And I just thought this was it. I was so in love. Now, mm-hmm. mind you, this was my first boyfriend, parent-approved boyfriend.
Okay.
So they didn't really know about any other person I dated mm-hmm. or who was my boyfriend before him.
Okay, got it. All right, keep the story going.
Where'd I leave off?
Y'all got married on a Tuesday night. You had on your black suit. And he had on his bank clothes.
So let me go back a little bit. People were advising us not to get married.
Okay.
My parents were for it. Now, if you ask my mother now, she says she wasn't. But they were for it. Our pastor, he wouldn't marry us because he didn't think that we were ready.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we didn't do the formal, what do you call it?
Like marriage counseling?
Counseling. We didn't do that with him. I think we met with him one time and ended up, you know, pushing the date up. Friends told us we shouldn't get married. His mom was against it.
Mm-hmm.
So the night we got married, she didn't even know.
Lord, you had on a black dress. People were telling y'all, I don't think this is a good idea. The pastor was like, I'm not gonna marry you. His mama was like, no.
Right, so she didn't know. It was just my mother and my two little brothers there. Then we each had...
Where was your dad? Was he working?
He was either working or had just gotten off work and was asleep.
Okay.
So we had that little... Our assistant pastor married us. The pastor was there because he was there for a meeting or something. So he came and sat in and like one other person. So that was it. We went home, back to his home. That next morning, his mom called. And it was like 6 in the morning, and I answered the phone. You know, that's when we still had home phones.
Mm-hmm.
So I answered the phone, and she's like, Charisse? And I'm like, yeah. She's like, how long you been there? I'm like, he didn't tell you we got married last night?
Girl, that's a mess.
Like, no, he didn't. I guess y'all was just too hot. and couldn't wait to get married. So she was like, but I guess I have a daughter now.
Congratulations, girl. Is that what she said? Child, congratulations. Okay. Wow. Okay, so let's transition to the middle part of the marriage. Like, y'all young, you know, honeymoon stage is over. Now, get into that part.
So the honeymoon stage was over almost immediately.
Okay.
Shortly after, a few months into our marriage, we separated because he told me he wasn't in love with me. That lasted about 4 days. I went back home. A couple more years go by. And then he texted me one day and said he didn't want to be married anymore. So that was our first long separation. We were separated about 4 months.
So now let me have a question here, or interject a question here. Were there signs, or actually I'm not going to even say were there, because there were. So I'm going to say instead, what were some of the signs that popped up that made you think, like, you know what, maybe this wasn't the best idea. Maybe I shouldn't have gotten married. Maybe I shouldn't have married him. Maybe he wasn't the one.
Well, the fact that we had been separated shortly after our marriage, that was a sign. The fact that I wasn't as blissfully happy as I thought one should be within the first year of marriage. Our honeymoon was even terrible. We went on a honeymoon 6 months after we got married, and it was to this day the worst trip of my life.
Where did y'all go?
The Bahamas.
Right. Okay.
And before we separated this time, where he sent me a text and told me he didn't want to be married anymore, that Christmas, it was Christmas 2000. I'll never forget it. We were on our way to the mall, and we had two of our friends from church in the car with us, and music, we had on the secular radio station, Chicago WGCI, and music's first single came on. What is it? So that came on, and he was like, oh, y'all heard this song now? I'm like,
how do you know?
Because this was at a time where he only listened to gospel music. So, you know, I was the heathen that listened to. So he like, yeah, y'all heard this. I like this song. And let me pop the CD in. So he had the CD. And I'm like, what? How do you know about this? How he got the CD? Yeah, my friend from work let me borrow this CD. I love this. So then I was like, this ain't right. Something ain't right.
You started getting that feeling, huh? That was like the first, like,
Yep. About a month later is when he sent me that text talking about he didn't want to be married anymore. And we were separated for 4 months at that time.
Okay.
He was messing around with somebody at the job. With the person who gave him that CD.
Clearly. Okay. Wow. All right. So now let's move into part three, the divorce and what led up to the divorce. Ooh. I mean, this is just like any other story. You know, it's the first, the beginning, the middle, and the end. So let's talk about the end.
Obviously, we ended up back together. We ended up back together. He begged for me back, all this stuff. We were happy for a while, maybe a year. We had our son. then things started to go back downhill. We got to the point where we weren't even sleeping in the same room together. Police had been to the house a couple times. I spent the night in the mental institution. I spent the night in jail.
Let's pause. I'm sure at some point during this podcast journey, we will be sharing all of these stories. Because let me tell you, they are worth being heard, okay? All right, I just had to say that. Continue on, Sister Charisse.
So around the time when those things happened, it was around my birthday, and he came to me. Like I said, we weren't sleeping in the same room or anything like that. We were living kind of like roommates. He came to me and asked me, let me say this. So he was over the gospel choir at his alma mater. So he came to me one day, and they used to go around singing. They had a lot of engagements, whatever. You know how it is with
gospel choirs anyway. But hey, it's not about me right now. Go ahead.
So he came one day, and he was like, "Did so-and-so call you for your birthday?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Oh, she was supposed to call you." And I'm like, "Okay, well, she didn't." This person was in the choir, and he had come to me. I don't know if this is in chronological order, but at some point he came to me and told me, you know, her mom is upset because she saw my number on the phone bill. But what happened was, and then he made up this elaborate story about burner phones and all this kind of crap.
You knew it was downhill when he started with what happened was.
Right. So whatever, I let it slide. I didn't think anything of it. I knew it was ridiculous, but I just let it go. So fast forward, I get to work one day, and there's a number on my desk for me to call this woman, who is this girl that I mentioned is her mother. She had my number because she was a childcare. She had a daycare in her home, and she was going to be like our backup for our son when my mother couldn't watch. So I see the number. I haven't started work yet. I go call him, and I'm like, "Why is such and such mother calling me? Like, there's a message." And he's like, "Oh, I don't know, but we'll call her when you get home." So I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I go back, sit down to work, and I'm like, "Nah, I can't do this." Go back and call her back. She tells me, "Well, I just wanted to tell you the type of man you're married to." And she proceeds to tell me that he... Now, let me issue a disclaimer here. This is for the purpose of just sharing our stories. It's not to put anybody down or shine a bad light. It's just the truth of what happened. This is our story and giving you background of why we're even the optimistic divorcees. Mm-hmm. So she said, "This is the type of man you're married to," and told me that he had been sleeping with her daughter. She broke it down. She was like, "I asked her, she denied it. There were all these numbers late at night. He would call after he had already dropped her off. He would call right back talking about he was checking on her." And she's like, "Well, didn't you just drop her off from the engagement? Mm-hmm. What are you checking on her for?"
Right.
Her daughter denied it, then finally told the truth. Mom asked, "Was it one time? Was it two times?" It was multiple times. I leave work. I confront him again. Mm-hmm. He makes up some elaborate story, and I let it go. Mm-hmm. At this point, I just wanted to believe him.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to believe that what he was telling me was the truth, and that she was mistaken, and that somebody was lying, but it wasn't him. Because I couldn't imagine that he would do something like that to me.
Mm-hmm.
We'll fast forward a couple more months. I'm dropping our son off at my mother's house. As I'm leaving to get from the door to get in the car, I hear my mother's phone ring. She answers the phone, and for some reason, I catch the conversation, and I know that is that girl's mother calling my mother. So this girl's mother is telling my mother everything that she had told me. Mm-hmm. So I call him and I'm like, such and such mother is on the phone with my mother. I'm on my way back home and you're going to tell me the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I get back to the house. I cried and prayed all the way home. I don't even know how I made it.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I got home, I was completely calm. Go in the house. I'm like, okay, it's time for you to tell me the truth. And he told me everything that such and such mother told you was true.
Mm-hmm. That's like the devastating part, you know? Of course, you know, you lived it.
I said, I was calm and I was just like, how could you do this to me? How could you do this?
Mm-hmm.
Packed up my little bag and went back to my mama's house.
And that was it.
But we still tried to make it work after that. Mm-hmm. Our son was little. I knew it was over, but I'm like, no, I don't want to be a single mother. Right. I want him to have a two-parent household like I had. I'm going to try to make it work. It lasted about 6 months. And then, about 6 months. And then I left.
Okay. So then that kind of leads me to my next question. I mean, you know, you and I both know divorce is a death, you know, and you mourn the loss of like your marriage, your relationship, your dreams, all the things that you thought, you know, would come with being with this person. And having this person, like, you know, in your life forever. So what did you mourn when you realized, like, this is it, this is over, your marriage is over? If you did it all. I mean.
Yeah, I absolutely mourned. And I think my mourning was a little bit different because when we broke up is when I started finding out more things.
Mm-hmm.
So I found out that he was literally in a relationship with another girl for 4 years during our marriage. And I found this out because while we were separated, she was babysitting my son.
And I still get surprised every time I listen to it.
I see your face and I'm like, I know you know this story.
I know, but it's just like, just hearing it again is like, oh my God. Okay, go ahead.
And it was Christmas time and I was going to buy her a gift. And he was like, oh, you don't need to get her anything. And I'm like, but we don't pay her. And she watches him whenever.
Oh, he was paying all right.
Yeah, she had been getting paid.
You've been getting paid, honey.
Again.
Weekly, bi-weekly. Daily, maybe.
4 years. Again, she was a part of the choir. And what takes the cake is her mother knew. She used to twist my husband's hair, this girl. He used to go over there. And so I found out once we had broken up for good that this is why I didn't have to pay her. This is why she was fine with watching my son because almost said she was effing my husband. Because not just that.
They could have said, you know, we can have our super producer block it out. Go ahead.
But he was in a whole freaking relationship with her for 4 years during our marriage. So I'm mourning that. I'm mourning the fact that what I thought was one thing while we were married was another.
Mm-hmm.
I'm mourning the fact that apparently I wasn't enough for him.
Yeah.
That he had to go get not younger girls who were smiling and kicking in my face and holding my baby. Taking care of my baby. The first girl had gotten pregnant. She was going with the boy in the choir. He was the drummer boy in the choir. I thought it was his when all along it was my husband's who he ended up making her have an abortion. I was mourning all of that because I was finding out all of this after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Even at the time, I thought there might be a chance for us to get back together. I was mourning the fact that I thought this was going to be forever. Mm-hmm. My forever love.
Ooh, my God. Well, I mean, take a breath, Sister Sharice. That is a lot. But it goes back to what you said, though, you know, and it leads into my final question, which is, you know, when you think about all that you've gone through with him and that relationship, what did you realize about yourself? What did you learn about yourself, about who you are, based on all that you had, you know, gone through with him and your marriage?
Where do I begin? I learned so much about myself. First of all, I think that's the first time I realized my strength, because I've shared part of the story, but that's not it. Mm-hmm. So just the me being able to live through that and not be somewhere locked up mm-hmm. forever in a mental institution. Mm-hmm. And just to be able to come out of that hole, I realized my strength. I realized how much I didn't know about myself before this all happened. Mm-hmm. I realized how low my self-esteem was at the time. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot.
Wow. Well, Sister Sharice, that was great. Thanks for sharing your story. I mean, of course, you know, I know, and like, I know I'd be looking like, whoa, what? But so, just to hear it again, because I mean, I was there around all that time when it was happening, but you know, still when you hear it again, it's really crazy. But we made it. We're here, girl.
Yeah, it's hard to think about it and talk about it in that detail. Like sometimes something might come up when I'm talking to my mother and I might get mm-hmm. teary-eyed. And she's like, what you crying for? That's over. You need to let that go.
And it's like you have, but going back into that place, people don't understand how traumatic that is. It's really a traumatic experience.
I've never cried so much before in my life when all of that was going on. Like, I had never felt such mm-hmm. pain before that. It was physical pain. Like, my heart literally hurts. My mother still tells me how, because when I went home that day after I found out and I was in the shower, she was like, I've never heard anybody cry like that before. I've still never heard anybody just cry and wail like you did. Because mm-hmm. it hurt so bad. Well, but dear God, I'm here.
Dear God, you're here. You made it.
I made it. And that prepared me to deal with other devastations in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally feel you. You are here. You made it. You stronger than ever, girl.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my. All right. Well, on that note, I guess it's my turn.
Your turn, Shari Lachelle. So, let's jump in.
Okay.
Your hubby to be.
Well, let's see. It was the summer of we met in 2002 at church, just like you and yours. Of course, it was choir things, and my church at the time, we were starting to have morning services, and so the choir director was like, okay, for the morning, like we had an ensemble, so I was part of the ensemble that was singing for the 8 o'clock service. And so she was like, well, somebody needs to play the piano, we need a drummer, I know someone. And so when he was planning to come to the church, she was like, Shari, I got somebody for you. Like, I think he's going to be so good. Like, I think y'all have a lot in common, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. Like, I was really kind of nonchalant about it, really. Because truth be told, I think I've always kind of been that person. You know how, like, you know some people that always have to be in a relationship? That's not me. Like, your girl is good and content just being by herself.
And so like I was cool. And so, you know, he comes to the church, he's playing the drums, and you know, to be honest, like he wasn't who I would typically date. You know, I like the preppy dudes, you know. And he wasn't that. He was total opposite. He had cornrows at the time. He was wearing some kind of jacket. I don't even know the brand or whatever, but you know, it wasn't like preppy brand like Hilfiger, like you know, Polo Ralph Lauren. You know what I mean? It was right. It might have been that. It might have been Pelly Pelly or something, FUBU or something. I don't know. I don't even remember. But yeah, so. Whatever it was, you know, I was like, okay, I wasn't really attracted to him. But the more we talked and hung out, you know, he had a really great personality. We had a lot of fun together. And, you know, I like to be sarcastic. I like to roast people. Like, we could just have a lot of fun, you know, conversations and banter, you know, back and forth. And we had a lot in common. And so that was pretty much the start of that. We pretty much jumped into dating exclusively really quickly. And
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Shari, what was your age? How old were you?
How old was I? I think I was 24, I think. Okay. 24, 25. I think. I might have been older. You know, my math is terrible. But anyway, in my mid-20s. And so you know, we were super close really quickly. Like he would pick me up from the train station, and you know, we would go out either to hang out at his house or at that time y'all house. or you know, we would go out to dinner, go to the movies. Like we were hanging out all the time. And
the y'all house part for people who might not.
Oh yes. Okay. So yeah. let me stick a pin in it right here. So at the time that I met my ex-husband, Charisse and her ex-husband, they had been separated for a little while. And so my ex-husband had moved in to become roommates with her ex-husband. I guess he needed a place to stay, and her ex-husband was like, yeah, come on and help on this mortgage bill. So but also during that time, Charisse and her ex had decided to get back together. And until me and my ex got married, he was still living there. And so that's what I mean when I say we would be at y'all house.
Right. That might have sounded a little strange to
me. I know. Like, what? Yeah, what? Yeah. So, you know, because my ex-husband was still living at their house until we got married, you know, sometimes we would just hang out. It would be like the four of us, you know, hanging out, watching movies, you know, kicking it, whatever. So anyway, again, like we really hit it off quickly. Things escalated quickly to the point, you know, when we decided to get married, that was quick. And even like when we would talk to my parents about it, like we would mention it to my parents, there was no like kind of shock. It was just like, okay, you know, even our friends, it was just like, okay, yeah, I mean, we could see that. Like there was no surprise. It was actually kind of like disappointing because we were like, dang, ain't nobody surprised, you know? So we actually ended up getting married 1 year to the day that we made it official, you know, that we would start dating. Yeah, so kind of like your story, as soon as like we went on the honeymoon and everything, and our honeymoon, it was terrible. Like it was not good. First of all, Mother the nature happened, so wasn't no sex going on at all. And I also ended up catching a cold. So I was sick on top of that, and we went to Jamaica. Yeah, and so like it just was not a good time. As soon as we got back from the honeymoon, he went to go hang out with his friends. Okay.
Wait. Can we pause here?
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about your wedding day?
About the limo experience? Yes. Is that what you're talking about? Okay.
Sure.
So on the way, let me backtrack. Yes. So prior to getting married, you know, if you read our blog, Sharice and I had a blog that talked about red flags. And prior to me getting married, there were a ton of red flags. One of them being how, you know, he always wanted to hang out with his friends. He really didn't want to spend, you know, time with me. Another one being, you know, there was a friend that I felt, now that you are engaged, now that you're getting married, you should no longer still be having the type of relationship with this particular friend that you have. But, you know, he wasn't willing to let that friendship go. He always made excuses for her, always made excuses as to, you know, why he should be friends with her and stay friends with her. And so it bothered me. And it was always a point of contention. It was always one of those sore spots in our relationship. Also, let me just say, part of, like, when we were engaged, I think we got engaged maybe in September. No, it was on Sweetest Day, actually, because I remember, was it on Sweetest Day? It was in the fall that we got engaged. But I didn't have a ring. I didn't get my ring until February before we got married. And we got married in April. So for that period of time, like, I literally was like walking around with no ring. Everybody was like, "Well, are you really getting married? Because you ain't got no ring." And, you know, and of course I had to be like, "Well, you know, he wants to, you know, buy it, and he doesn't want it. He doesn't want to have to, you know, pay for it. He wants to just buy it outright." And so, which, you know, I respected him for that, but I was like, man, like, it was putting me in a tough position.
Right. You,
but anyway,
you know, we want to see that ring, girl.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is that, and that's part of the engagement experience. You know what I mean? And I didn't have that. So anyway, I mean, the ring, it was a beautiful ring. It was great. I'll tell the story about that too. But anyway, so in the limo, I'm chuckling about the ring, sorry. But in the you know, I just remember being super quiet and like my bridesmaids, which Sharice was one, you know, like I said, we hadn't known each other for very long, but we just instantly like clicked. So anyway, my bridesmaids are in the limo and they're just like background noise. And I just remember being really quiet and having this inner conversation with myself, really trying to figure out if I wanted to get married, if I wanted to marry him, if it was the best decision for me, because I just wasn't sure really that he was going to be the man that I need him to be, that he was going to just treat me the way that I needed to be treated. And of course, I'm basing this off of the red flags that I'm seeing. And although he's telling me one thing, the actions aren't changing. So I really went this with like a whole faith thing for real, because, you know, in that limo, I'm thinking about getting married and, well, if I should get married, but also like concerned about, what are people going to think? What are people going to say? We've spent all this money. My parents have spent this money. You know, we planned this wedding. People have come out from out of town and they've spent like, what? It was just so much. And, you know, I just didn't want to disappoint people, and I didn't want to embarrass my parents. I didn't want to be embarrassed. And so I was just like, okay, maybe it's cold feet. And I went through with it. But again, as soon as we went on the honeymoon, it was just like, really, like, what happened? What did I do? And so we still had the same issues with the woman, you know, the friend being all up in the videos, dancing all up in the videos. You know, like that situation, it just never went away. But it became something that it was always swept under the rug, but it was always there. It was always just like this thing that just kept being, again, like a point of contention in the relationship. And as many times as I asked about it, that's as many times as he denied it and said, you know, nothing was happening. But, you know, let me tell you, he would, like, at one point his car broke down. And so when you're married, and I'm going off of, you know, this is how my parents did, and this is how I would think most married couples would do. Right. If my husband's car is out of service, why not use my car? You know what I mean? We make it work, the both of us, with the one car that we have until we can get your car fixed. But that's not what happened. He decided that, no, he's going to have her pick him up. So she would pick him up for work. She would pick him up to go places. She would drop him off. When we would be at church, for because he was the our choir director, he wouldn't ride. Maybe he would give me the honor, you know what I mean? The opportunity and the honor to ride with me, his wife, to church, to choir rehearsal. But most times, he was getting rides from her. She was dropping him off, she was picking him up, and it was always, you know, they also had like this little side hustle together. And, you know, it was, oh, well, because we're doing this. Remember back in the day when people would have ad books every time, like, you know, the choir or the church has some kind of anniversary, people buying ads. So they would have these kind of booklets and stuff, right? Or they would do like a bitch, where it was like a printing service. And so, you know, it was always some kind of print job that they had. And it always ended up being late into the night. And he just, you know, he was going to leave work and go to her house to work on this stuff. And then after he would be at her house, it was always that. And then he got on a bowling team. Who picked him up and took him to and from the bowling alley? She did. And I was the one that had the problem when it was happening. You know what I mean? It's like, I was the one that was the crazy one, thinking like, what's wrong with this picture? And it got to the point where I couldn't sleep at night because he wouldn't come home. Sometimes, a lot of times it wouldn't be until after midnight. And so 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, there were plenty of times when I would like get up, put my clothes on. And this is when his car was working. And I would go to her house because I knew where she lived. I would go to her house and I would see his car parked in her, in front of her house. And this was several times.
Can you tell the listeners who she was? Who was this woman?
What's her name? Her name is
Big Reveal. Everybody get your recorders out, pen and paper.
Find her on Facebook. No, for real. She was okay, so they used to go to the same church. And so I guess like their church was having like this 100 year anniversary or whatever. And so she was like the president of the choir and he was the choir director at the time at that church. And that's how they became friends. But then they, from that stemmed this community choir that he started, that they started. So they were like co-founders of this community choir. And so she was the co-founder of this church. She was, I mean, of this choir. She was also like 30 years older than him.
not 30.
Really not 30, but you know, I'm petty, okay? Let me just put it out there for those who don't know, I am petty. And any chance that I get to be petty, I'm probably gonna be petty, even though I shouldn't be petty. Just say a prayer for me.
This okay? is, you can be petty for this. Right. He liked them old and mine liked them young.
Right. So right there we go. It was a spectrum. Okay. So yes, he liked them old, apparently. Yeah. And so old and not cute. That's how he liked them. And yeah, so she
So you saw the red flags from the beginning.
But I was just thinking he's going to know that as a husband, like, you know, I was naive because I was thinking, oh, well, he's going to change.
Yeah.
And that's when I learned, like, no, that's not what happens. You can get married and guess what? You're marrying the same person that he was before. Or if you're a man, you're marrying the same person that she was before. Or if you're a same-sex couple, you're marrying the same person that they were before. Just because get married, guess what? You're getting the same person. The person changes when they want to change. You can't make them change. You can't force them into change.
Preach.
They change when they want to change.
Absolutely.
So yes, that's what I learned.
So what was the, since you had been seeing these red flags from the very beginning, tell us about the straw that broke the camel's back.
All right. Now, I've told this story many times, so I won't dwell on this for long. I shan't be long, as they say. But what had happened was, so his community choir, they had an engagement. And Sharice was singing in the choir. I still be getting mad that she was singing with his choir. I'm like, you're supposed to be my friend and you singing in the enemy's choir. But anyway, I digress. So he's getting ready to go to this engagement and he's ironing his clothes. So at the time we had a 2-bedroom apartment, and in this apartment, you know, we had the ironing board, we had the computer set up in there, and you know, his clothes and stuff just in that room. So he's ironing his clothes to get ready to go to this engagement, and I'm on the computer playing solitaire. So while I'm playing solitaire, he was like, oh, I need to check my email, I gotta find the address to the church that we have to go to. I'm like, okay. So I minimize my screen. He pulls up his email, gets the email, you know, finds what he needs to find, but he forgets to minimize his email. So I'm like, look at God. I minimize it for him, and then I bring back up the solitaire game. So I'm continuing to play that, you know, just waiting until he leaves. And as soon as I hear that car screeching out the driveway, I get on his email and I just start looking through. Now, I started looking because I had always, again, had an inkling that something was happening. And every time, like I said before, every time I asked him, it was, no, nothing's happening. Like, we're just cool. We're just friends. Like, I would point blank ask him. I even went to this woman's house one day. Okay. I went to her house and I knocked on her door and I asked her, are you sleeping with my husband? She looked me dead in my face with her son by her side and said, no, we're just friends. So, I mean, even then, I knew she was lying, you know. But anyway, I let it go. So, anywho, you know, that was my opportunity to really see if something was happening. And lo and behold, it was, because I found a plethora of emails with inappropriate content talking about all the things, you know, that she would do to him and the things that they would do when they would get together. And you know, all of these things. And so I said, oh, okay. Of course, my heart sank. It was like a mix between relief and disappointment and sadness and anger. I mean, and the relief really came from the fact that I knew I wasn't crazy. You know what I mean? Like, I knew it. I knew it. It wasn't me. And so from then on, I went to print out the emails. I called Sharice and was like, girl, I need you to come over here because I'm going to be getting, you, what did Angela Bassett say in Waiting to Exhale? Get your, that's what I told Sharice. I was getting mine and I need her to help me pack up my apartment to get my stuff out. So, you know, while the emails and stuff were printing out and while I was waiting for Sharice and some other friends to come over, I decided to trash the house because I had to let the anger out. So the kitchen was a war zone. I took all the dishes out. I smashed all the dishes. I was cutting up stuff. I mean, it was, y'all, it was a mess. It was a hot mess. Yeah, it was great. I mean, hey, you know, it worked for what I needed to work for. It was definitely stress relief. So anyway, when Sharice got to the house, we went to the church and proceeded to
Kinko's first.
Well, yeah, we went to Kinko's. I got the copies that I needed. I made two, one for him, one for her, because remember, they're co-founders of this choir. So guess what? They're going to be together. I didn't want him to just have a copy. No, you get your own copy. You get a copy. You get a copy. Okay. That's what happened. Oh yeah, so we go up to the church. I'm asking, you know, do you know where the choir is? okay, they lead me back to the room where the choir is. Sharifa's a few, you know, steps away from me. And I hand each one of them their own personal copy of the emails. And they're, first of all, they're surprised to see me. Of course they would be. And then they're looking at the emails, trying to figure out like what's happening. And then they're reading some of the stuff, and then they figure it out like, oh, yeah. So with that, I turn around, I walk out, and he's running behind me trying to talk. But at this point, I'm like, there's nothing to talk about. There's nothing to talk about. So yeah, that was that. Ooh. That was the end. I left.
What a story. When I'm listening to that, I'm reacting like I didn't know or like it was new.
Like you weren't there.
Right. My heart is racing listening to this story. So shared the one lesson that you learned about that you can't change anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Like you asked me, what did you learn about yourself?
What did I learn about myself? I mean, I learned that I'm a bad bitch. No. I mean, I did learn that. Yes, I learned that. But I learned that, like you said, Sharice, like, I am resilient. You know, I went through a lot. Not to the extent that Sharice did in terms of, like, you know, some of the situations, but just in terms of like my self-esteem, I think at that point too, like my self-esteem had been shot. And I had great self-esteem. I knew my worth. I knew who I was. But after leaving that marriage, I didn't have a clue. Like I was, you know how they say you torn and battered? That was me. I left that torn and battered. Like I had to build myself back up. I had to figure out who I was. But I figured out, you know, that I am strong, that I am a resilient person. I figured out who God was and who God was to me in that. Yeah, I mean, I think that was when I really had the deepest relationship with God, because I felt like he was the only one that could really understand what I was going through. You know, I like my friends who were married, they, not to say that they didn't have issues in their marriages, but they certainly weren't the ones I was having, you know what I mean? So they couldn't relate. My mom and dad had been married for over, you know, 40 something years at that point. So my parents, they couldn't relate. And so a lot of times, like you said, Sharice, like the amount of tears that you cried and how your heart literally hurt, it's like that's how I know, like, the term heartache, it is real. Because I would literally go in a closet and talk about a prayer closet. I had a prayer closet. Like, I would go in the closet and sometimes I would just cry. I couldn't pray. I would just cry and just hope that God knew or understood at least what my heart was trying to say, because my mouth couldn't form any words to pray anything, because at that point I was tired. I didn't have any words to pray, you know. Yeah. And I think I also learned that that I am worth having someone love me the way I deserve to be loved. And that wasn't it, you know. And that I didn't have to stay in a place that I wasn't wanted. Because if you want to be with someone else, which clearly did, because you showed more allegiance to that person, guess what? I don't have to stick around for it. I can let myself exit stage left. And
you are now free to move about the country.
Yes. And that, my friends, is how we became the optimistic divorcees.
That's it.
Oh, can I give you one little follow-up to my story? I know we need to wrap this up.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just like to share that years later, the one girl found me on Facebook,
mm-hmm,
and apologized to me.
Wow.
Said, you know, I have my own family, kids, and husband now, and I would never want to put anybody through, or what I put you through. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I was young, I was dumb. You know, you don't have to respond, but I just wanted to let you know this is how I felt. Then, a few years ago, her husband died.
Did you find me that, Charisse? This doesn't sound familiar to me.
I'm sure I did. But he was in his 30s and just, I think, just had a heart attack.
Oh my God.
Died.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, nobody ever contacted me on Facebook and apologized to me. I mean, I'm still waiting. If you happen to hear this, or if anyone knows who I'm talking to, y'all can let her know. Don't give her my number, but she can find me on Facebook and drop me a DM. She can slide into the DMs with an apology.
I heard that.
But maybe she doesn't think she's wrong. Maybe she thinks, you know, hey, I deserved him at the time. You didn't, so that's why I did what I did. I don't know. I'm just making stuff up, maybe.
Yeah, she deserved him, all right.
Well, so, on that note, that concludes today's episode of the Optimistic Divorcees with Shari and Charisse. Like Charisse said earlier, we wanted to give some background into our own personal stories so that you could see, like, we've been through some stuff, you know, with our marriage, but we were able to come out on the other side, you know, bigger and better. Not bigger in terms of weight, because who needs that, but, you know, better than before. And also, I do want to just always keep this in mind and let you guys know, don't be confused by the name Optimistic Divorcees. Like, we are optimistic, okay? We do not have this platform to put down marriages or even to put down our ex-husbands. Like Charisse said, we're just speaking our truth. So with that being said, we hope that, you know, you got something out of us sharing our stories. And we're going to continue to share some stories of other optimistic divorcees on upcoming podcasts. But in the meantime, in between time, if you want to follow us on the gram, you can at the Opt Divorcees, and that's THEOPTDIVORCEES. You can follow me, if you like, at Shari Lachelle. That's SHARILACHELLE. And Charisse.
And you can follow me at Au Naturel, AUNATUREL.
And if you have a topic or, you know, have a story that you would like to share, feel free to send us an email at theoptimisticdivorceespodcast@gmail.com. And last but not least, we have to say this. Please subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform, the one that you're listening to right now. And also, give us 5 stars. Please. And yeah, give us a nice little review. And if you really like us, tell a friend about the podcast. All right, until next time. Bye. Bye.
Optimistic about life. Real about love. Ooh. See, I've been through it. Hard times in love, I admit it.